Welcome to MGO Radio 3.11. We are at the Bow Store. It is a hopping Bow Store the night
really
before
is.
The Ohio State game. There are people in here purchasing things, making all sorts of retail decisions, shopping for their holiday gift-giving needs.
Wondering what these weirdos are doing in the back of the store.
Yeah. Why is there this cave troll and some hipster with a ska band back in the store talking to people? Well, we have a podcast that we do here weekly during football season, if you were wondering.
Yeah. I don't know if anybody was, but...
No, but now they know.
Yeah.
Before we get started, we'd like to thank our sponsors, Underground Printing, the Bow Store, the Residence Inn, Ann Arbor Downtown, Homeshire Landing, Peak Wealth Management, the Alumni Association of the University of Michigan, Ann Arbor Elder Law, Lantana Hummus, Human Element, Ecotelligent Homes, and Michigan Law Grad. And because it is Ohio State Week, there is beer here that Ace has already started drinking.
Hey, man, it's Ohio State
Week.
He's
probably about 2 ounces into his first beer, so expect some sort of wild outburst by, I don't know, what, 5 minutes from now?
Yeah, that sounds about right.
Gotta getting you hopped up on goofballs.
I mean, for this week, that seems preferable to the alternative.
Yeah, I mean, I guess we'll start with some feelings ball. This sucks.
Yeah, it's...
Like, you're going to the Ohio State game, and it's just for, like, the 6th, 7th time in the last 10 years, you just want it to not be in the face. And occasionally you get it very much not in the face, and you still lose because Devin Gardner can't quite get it all the way there. He doesn't get a 2-point conversion. But this, again, feels like one of those years where Michigan's just looking to have some...
Not get it in the face.
Have some defeat with dignity.
Oh, man.
I mean, it sucks, but that's what it is. That's what happens when I think we can say the top 2 quarterbacks go out.
Yeah, I think that is quite safe to say at this point.
And you're one snap away from playing Alex Melzone. And people on the blog are like, that doesn't really count as an extreme injury situation. And I'm like, the pen is hovering an inch from my eye. And I'm like, I should just do this. I should just I should just do this. I will be happier.
Yeah, one of these times I'm going to, like, accidentally lock the comments on a game recap before it's posted. It might be this weekend. We'll see how it goes.
We should really, like, charge people to leave comments. That's actually a wonderful answer.
Yes. Oh, a penny God. For your thoughts.
No, more than that.
Several dollars for your thoughts.
If I'm going to read this stuff, I'm gonna get some stuff. Anyway, it's bad.
Yeah,
it's not a good feeling. And the worst part for me is that this used to be before Thanksgiving.
Yeah.
So Michigan would have the Ohio State game, and I'd be done for the year, and I could like go home to Thanksgiving, like, and like not
put your
have,
feet up a little bit,
right, and not like try to like get out of UFR or whatever. And I was unable to get the Wisconsin UFR done, entirely my own fault. Well, also the universe, because I was just suffused with this crushing ennui about how none of this matters. Because John O'Korn is going to start at quarterback against Ohio State.
Yeah. I wouldn't have done it either.
I got one of them done.
Yeah, that's true. Which, that was more than I would have got done.
So, because it also was the defense. So, like, what is there to say about the defense? It happened, the same thing that happened.
I mean, what is there to say? I guess there are things to say about the offense, just not fun things.
Yeah, I mean... We'll get in. Oh, actually, we should get in that now.
Yeah, I think that's the segment we're supposed to be doing.
Oh, man. It's been a long season, folks. Been a long season. Yeah, so the offense, we kind of talked about this a little bit in the game column and on Twitter. And it's interesting, J251, who's a walk-on offensive lineman from the 80s, mm-hmm. had been talking about this on Twitter for a couple weeks when he does a review of the game on Twitter where he takes out his phone and he tapes some stuff and puts up his impressions. Always very useful.
Yes.
And he'd sort of started wondering about this as well. And when I went back and I looked over the tape, I was I won't say shocked, because I know this has been happening, but I was surprised at the extent of how just completely bizarre things were happening. The most bizarre...
Up front.
Yeah, up front. The most bizarre of which is, like, they run a power play, and on power play, the center and the backside tackle, I almost never even grade them, because all they have to do is kind of, like, vaguely obstruct a couple of backside guys.
Yeah, just sort of get in the way-ish.
Right, and so Patrick Kugler blocks the nose tackle, doesn't block a defensive end, and then it's one of those situations where Juwan Bushel-Beatty is chasing a guy to the ball carrier and looks terrible on a thing that's not really his problem.
Yeah.
And that happens on zone with some frequency. And I think it happens with some frequency no matter if you're good or bad at zone, just because sometimes you misidentify what you're supposed to do at the first level. On a power play, I don't know how that happens.
Yeah. Yeah, it'd be one thing if it was an isolated incident, but that was not.
Right, and so you have those, and that was one that was maybe a little bit subtle and didn't show up to everybody immediately, but everybody watching this game immediately knew that, oh, Michigan is just letting outside linebackers run at their quarterback with no attempt to block them.
Yes.
And, oh, man. Like, there was that huge sack on Peters on 3rd and 6, and worse than that was there was an empty backfield issue similar that Peters was able to spin away from. But, like, maybe Chris Evans was at fault on the sack because he left the backfield and he was supposed to stay in. I don't think so.
Yeah.
I think that goes back to the line call. But when there's nobody in the backfield, like there's nobody in that field and there's five guys on the line of scrimmage, it doesn't seem that hard for, like, the right tackle to be like, all right, I'm going to get the guy on the right.
Yeah, it's just sort of a matter of counting in from the outside and figuring out.
And then if they, like, twist or stun or something, then you have to pick that up. But just letting a guy scot-free past you with no attempt to block him is just... I mean, what do you do with that?
They'll have a new center next year. I think that's what you do with that.
Well, I mean, that is kind of the danger of making this bit of analysis, is because, like, boy, what's the nicest way for Michigan's offensive line to be completely screwed up? If the center, who's not going to be here and hasn't played, and there's some opportunities for him to play.
Yeah.
Earlier in his career.
There was a discrepancy between the hype coming in and how his career played out.
Well, I'm just, you know, when Newsom goes out, they don't bring in Kugler.
Yeah.
When Braden moves over to left tackle, they don't bring in Kugler. The guys that they bring in are, you know, true freshmen or Juwan Bushel-Beatty, a guy who really struggled.
Yeah, when you've got Ben Bradison playing on the interior of the line last year as a true freshman, that's a bit of an eye-opener.
Right, after he had practiced at left tackle for most of fall camp.
Yeah.
So you have a fourth-year player who's been an interior lineman his entire career losing a battle to a guy who's a true freshman and who practiced at left tackle because he was competing for that job. So that kind of points to, like, maybe there aren't some things that aren't real good about his play. He doesn't seem physically overmatched, so what's left?
You've got the mental side there.
Right.
Yeah.
And so if he's just hugely substandard at making line calls and figuring that kind of stuff out, which isn't a shot at his intelligence, like, it's, you have to think fast, and some people who are good at thinking can't think fast. Like, you know, stand-up comedians who are bad at improv. Everybody's bad at improv, though. Oh, man, I just pissed off the wrong people.
You just burned some people who will have very vocal ways to tell you their displeasure.
I really hope that BoJack Horseman thing where they have, like, a Scientology improv cult isn't real now.
Such a great episode.
What was I talking about?
Patrick Kugler.
All right. I wish you hadn't reminded me. So even though, like, the best thing for Michigan going forward is that their center is wildly substandard at making line calls, and that's an issue that will help start resolving itself next year.
Will help get it in the face on Saturday.
Right? Yeah. I mean, that's
we're kind of already there.
You know, it is what it is at that point. But I think there's a lot of evidence, and I put it up on the blog because I thought it was useful to do so, that is in fact the case.
Yeah.
Because some of the things that were happening were just kind of like, I don't see that. And I've been doing this for a long time. So,
yeah. Yeah, I mean, I guess that that is weirdly the optimistic outlook because,
right, yeah.
I mean, they bring back everybody else except Cole.
Yeah.
And it would be nice to have an explanation for why you see all these guys running up free, and given that there's not one guy that you're looking at. I mean, you know, it's Cesar Ruiz on one play, it's Mason Cole on another, it's Ben Bredesen, it's everybody. So,
In this game, it was mostly Kugler, even if it wasn't the line call, so he got most of the pass protection minuses because the stunts you just couldn't pick up.
Yeah.
Like, there was the sack that happened, and there was a chop block on the same play, and both of those were pretty much Kugler leaving his guy to go block a guy that Higdon was about to cut. So is that Higdon? Is that Kugler? Is that Ruiz? It's sort of Ruiz because you want Ruiz to realize that there's a guy slanting outside of him that's no longer his responsibility and put himself in a position where if Kugler does leave, that guy doesn't get to go direct to the quarterback.
Yeah.
But given that that looked like a pretty solid pickup by Higdon, I put most of that on Kugler. So there were like 8 team protection minuses and 5 Kugler protection minuses, and I think most of the team ones are line calls that go back to Kugler. So, you know, this has been something that Michigan has been able to work through against better defenses, but they had some opportunities to make plays in this game on the ground, and there were a number of one-guy plays. There were a number of plays where Michigan was physically unable to, like, hold up against a much better defense, and then there were line call issues. So all of that combines, and you get, like, 2 yards of carry for your running backs.
Yeah.
And, I mean, it's a major come down from, you know, a solid month and a half of just paving people on the ground, and it really kind of sapped all enthusiasm I had for this game coming up because, like, you know, if Michigan does a decent job running the ball against Wisconsin, then, okay, maybe you can see a path to victory, but not really now.
Yeah, I mean, I guess, like, the if you're looking for hope, it's that Ohio State doesn't run a 3-4. Because, I mean, that did seem to throw Michigan off, is that Wisconsin is a true 3-4, and they were not able to figure out where pressure was coming from on a given down. It's a little easier to identify against a 4-3.
Yeah.
I mean, I'm still not riding high off last week.
I don't disagree with you. It was interesting that a lot of these issues came when, you know, Wisconsin would back one of their outside linebackers out in the coverage. But at the same time, there was that wildcat snap where Wisconsin was a very bizarre formation that basically says, hey, we are slanting hard to the field. And that's what they did. And Michigan couldn't pass it off and actually get it right. And I'm just like, you know, it's 11 games in. That I don't think that was that difficult. Like,
yeah.
Ruiz needs to pass his guy off to Kugler and then release. And then you actually can have a cutback lane. And that didn't happen, and what's more, it looked like multiple guys didn't know what was supposed to happen. So, it's frustrating. And it's frustrating now because this was something that we thought we had some hope with.
Yeah.
You know. But like everything else that's good in Michigan, it falls apart at the end of the season, leaving you with nothing but ashes.
Hey, John Beilein has a...
Okay.
Like a word.
Michigan football. I don't even think that's an exaggeration. I don't think that's an exaggeration at all. Everything falls apart and dies.
I mean, you've been blogging about Michigan football since 2004. That
yes.
Seems like a fair assessment given that time span.
I've blogged about one Michigan win when the coaching matchup was Brady Hoke versus Adam Sandler.
Yeah. You know. It's been a tough decade plus.
Indeed.
Yeah.
Indeed. I did do most of the UFR for the defense. I just didn't write it up. And I have nothing to say that you haven't heard 1,000 times before. You know, they faded a little bit at the end because they'd been out there all the time. The slot fade, the corner is a weakness. I question putting Jalen Kelly Powell out there. When the coverage from the safeties on that has usually been pretty good.
Yeah, it's taken a usually pretty perfect throws to
beat
them.
That was by far the most open that route had been and gave Hornibrook a relatively easy hit there to go get 51 yards. So
yeah.
not great. But the rest of it was Hornibrook, like, throwing into coverage because that's all he does. He's like, this coverage does not bother me. I will throw into it. And usually he's right. Like, the number of pinpoint throws in this game was absurd.
Yeah.
So, I mean,
he's a DO or BR guy.
Right. Yeah, exactly. Like, he doesn't care if that guy's covered. He can put it in that, like, 3-inch window. And when he doesn't, that's when he gets into trouble, and he's gotten into a lot of trouble. But now I understand the weird stats they had.
Yeah.
So they entered. They were, like, one of the best passing down teams in the country. And I'm like, what? And now I'm
that
like,
shouldn't happen.
Oh. Their quarterback is a weird, slightly malfunctioning cyborg. So there you go.
Yeah. Yeah, a cyborg with a just pop gun arm, which doesn't make sense for a cyborg. You think you'd dial that up a bit, but
yeah, he's definitely in the Breeze Brady category of cyborgs who are not physically impressive.
Yeah.
So what do you do? What happens if you switch the quarterbacks in that game? What is the score of that game? 35-0
I don't know, because I think you'd have to swap out the offensive lines, too.
Yeah. Yeah.
Sorry to bring that crashing back down to earth.
No, it's fine. It's fine.
Everything's
all right, let's not talk about this
that sounds good.
Game ever again. Let's take a break. We're going to come back. We are going to talk about the Maui Jim Maui Invitational Maui.
Mm-hmm.
Wowie!
Let me just tell you a couple things to keep in your mind while you're out there. When we take the field, we're going to win. We've got big goals. We've got big ideas. We've got to win this game, and there is no game on the remainder of our schedule more important than the one you're going down to the tunnel to play today. Now let's go. Let's go.
Underground Printing is proud to present the Bow Store. Visit us at our new location at 333 South Main or online at www.bow.team.
It's painless, it's online. It's group ordering made easy for your next custom printed apparel order. Pogo from Underground Printing takes the aggravation out of custom printing for a group. Whether you're selling shirts for a fundraiser, organizing a large event, or trying to collect sizes and payment for a family reunion, Underground Printing is here to help. Save time and hassle every step of the way with our easy-to-use site. No more guessing what to order, chasing people down to pay, or wasting time trying to sort out who needs what. We'll set it up and you can just sit back and relax. We can even take care of individual shipping. To learn more about Pogo, visit us at any of our convenient locations or at pogo.undergroundshirts.com.
Hi, this is Seth from MGoBlog. So we bought our home through a local bank. Family friend was the banker, but the underwriter was just it was a nightmare. So we went to refinance. I talked to Matt. It was so different. He shops alone to different underwriters, so we were a priority for them. And he knows what they needed from us ahead of time, so we didn't have to keep digging through our old paperwork. He's incredibly ethical. He knows the system. He knows where they take advantage. And he keeps a small shop, and he does all the work himself, so he keeps all the costs down. Anyway, that's why I highly recommend Matt. He's licensed in Michigan, Ohio, and Florida. You can give him a call at 734-531-9950. Visit his new office in Ann Arbor on State Street, or go to homesurelending.com/mgoblog, and he'll take care of you. That's Homesure Lending, NMLS number 1161358.
If you need a place to stay in Ann Arbor and don't want to be stuck out by I-94, there's a new hotel downtown, and the owners, who should be well known to the Michigan community, have asked our help to get the word out. The Martin family, yes, that Martin family, recently opened the Residence Inn Ann Arbor downtown, just a block from Main Street and a short walk to Michigan Stadium. They're competitively priced and offer a free hot breakfast, free Wi-Fi, fully equipped kitchen and every suite and an indoor pool. That's the Residence Inn Ann Arbor downtown.
The places you'll go may seem far from Ann Arbor. From San Francisco to St. Louis to Shanghai. But as members of the Alumni Association, we're never far. Because Michigan is more than a place. It's a mindset that connects us. For those who leave Michigan, but for whom Michigan never leaves, this is where you belong. The Alumni Association of the University of Michigan. Join today at umalumni.com.
Feel like nothing's changing, and that's the price we pay. You see that
kind of sounded like the Dismemberment Plan, which is not at all rave music.
No, it's not.
I wonder if someone would come in like halfway through this podcast and be like, why do they always talk about raves? And there's no reason,
no,
hypothetical
it's,
person.
It's my fault.
Yes. As is most...
most everything
nonsense.
On this podcast.
No. I won't call you something terrible of podcasting today.
How nice of you.
What? You know that's like a threat every time, and you just... No.
I just blow on.
I absolve
it's in my
you
Twitter
of
bio. Yes. Like it's a part of me now.
Anyway, speaking of things that are a part of you, the Maui Invitational has come and gone,
and I'm still on Hawaii time, even though I didn't actually go to Hawaii.
So Michigan loses to LSU, which is mildly catastrophic, because then they have to go play Chaminade.
Yeah,
which erases a potential like. Useful game off the record.
Yeah, at least one that counts.
Doesn't affect their RPI, at
which
least.
Is nice. Yeah.
And then they like fool around with VCU, end up like 60-60 late in that game, and use a decent call against Moritz Wagner.
Got a bit of the arm, maybe.
A little bit.
And then he rips off six straight points. And
yeah, so breaks the tie by.
Cans a three on the other end.
By. Basically ripping a guy's arm off and beating him with it until the ball comes out. And then
we're going to have to put a moratorium on the Mo Wagner gets terrible whistles.
He got
like at least he had some bad ones.
He had some bad ones.
He was at four fouls because that's the thing that also would have fouled him out.
That was. Yeah. But because like two of those were ridiculous. Like two of those are the ones where like John Beilein is just like touching
just,
his temple.
Yeah,
and
there were
like,
some. Gifable John Beilein moments from this week.
You've already done that.
Yeah, a couple of them, yeah. But those were from, yeah. Those are mostly from LSU when he was just existentially depressed.
Well, I mean, you blow a 9-point lead to LSU mostly because their little point guard is like lying on the floor and shooting with his butt and it still goes in.
Yeah, I mean, he had one where he was literally a foot off the floor and scooping it underhand and it goes in. He hits some absurd threes in this game.
Yeah.
I mean, you look at it and it's like, I mean, it was a very disappointing loss because they blow the late lead and the impact on the schedule is outsized for that game.
Yeah.
But watching the game itself, it was like, I'm pretty encouraged by a lot of what's happening here because that was like Matthews and Wagner had it going that whole game.
Yeah.
Matthews drops 28, Wagner drops 24. They show this chemistry with the side screen where they're able to either get Wagner popping open for a mid-range or three-point shot or Matthews attacking the lane. It kind of sets up perfectly for both of their skill sets. But they don't get – Duncan Robinson gets – basically shut out of this game against LSU. He still has trouble dealing with athletic, lanky defenders who just will stick with him off the ball.
And to some extent, that's fine because a lot of those Charles Matthews drives, the lane's wide open because...
Yeah. I mean, like Duncan Robinson has magnetism. He's got that gravity. So that part's fine as long as he's not hucking up shots, and he wasn't doing that. The problem is that they got pretty much nothing from the point guard spot, and that has become a trend and a very disappointing one because that did not really improve through the rest of the Maui tournament either.
No, you get like a play here and there from him, and then you'd be like, all right, well, maybe this can be like this guy kind of getting his feet under him, and then like the next three things that would happen involving whichever point guard it was would be bad to real bad.
Yeah. So, I mean, Xavier Simpson's had his ups and downs. He's clearly the best defensive option on offense. He is just not nearly aggressive enough, and he is combining that with like a really elevated turnover rate. So that's quite far from ideal.
Well, when you have no usage, it's like you have two turnovers, and that's
yeah. But I mean, also his usage is at 14, but his shot percent is only at 8. So he's just not a threat to really put the ball up, and he's turning the ball over on a third of his possessions right now. so that's one option. And then, I mean, Eli Brooks got two starts. He started against Chaminade and VCU.
And he has like a couple good – like he cans a three off the bounce, and he has a nice pass to Wagner.
Yeah, and he's an interesting option because if he can hack it on defense, and unfortunately late against VCU he had a couple ugly defensive possessions that ends up getting pulled for Simpson, situationally. But he seems like he's the best option off the ball at point guard. And since Michigan is running so much of their offense through Charles Matthews and Muhammad Ali Abdur-Rahman, who's actually become a little bit more of a distributor, I think he's at 5 or 6 straight games where he has 4 assists.
Okay, yeah, that's good.
So, and he also, I think he's only turned the ball over once this season. His turnover rate is 1.9.
So he's really the point guard.
So he is basically the point guard right now. It has hurt his efficiency as a scorer a little bit.
A little bit.
A lot.
A lot?
So far. He's at 91.
Okay, but he's 8 of 28 from 3, and that's not his level.
Yeah.
Like, early in the season, like, three-point luck is...
Oh, I mean, we'll be saying that about everybody on this team right now, except Duncan Robinson. The three-point luck has been brutal. But I think Brooks has a chance, even though he is not the distributor among the point guards right now, just because if he can be the most reliable guy to hit an open three... then that's probably the best thing for this offense right now.
Is maybe the answer there Jordan Poole?
We'll see.
I mean, if he's not going to be the point guard, if Mar is really the point guard, then like he's your best shooter from the poo-poo platter you got back
Absolutely.
There.
The issue with Poole is going to be figuring out what else he brings.
Does he have to? He can just be...
The problem is you got to play defense. And, like, Jordan Poole in high school was – there were a couple games that I tuned in for Lalu where he was getting pulled situationally as a defender.
Yeah, he's skinny.
So I just – I mean, there's a reason that they kind of had him on the early redshirt track, although Ibby Watson's start to the season has pulled Jordan Poole off of the redshirt track, it seems like.
I mean, we do have to talk about what he did against LSU, which was –
the shooting gallery.
Like he comes in and he just jacks up like how many shots was it?
I think he jacked up 4 shots in 7 minutes. because he played a minute in the second half and didn't attempt one, but in the first half he's in there for 7 minutes and takes 4 shots, makes one of them, commits 3 fouls. It's just totally overmatched on defense.
And the rest of his line is a trillion.
Nothing's.
And he looks awful.
And then against VCU, he gets in there very briefly and throws a pass into like the fourth row.
Yes. And there's like some other like ridiculous.
Yeah, there was another
over.
Event that like I didn't bother taking note of where it's just like this guy's not going to play probably as the season goes
and,
on.
Like, can we make that determination now?
It'd be nice because, you know, that might have really been the difference against LSU.
Yeah.
They could have. Taking those 7 minutes back and
giving it to Jordan Poole or Austin Davis or Mark Denal, anybody.
Bring in someone. But yeah, I mean, I hate to say it, but Ibby Watson's kind of the new like Mark Donnell. Like when you see him trotting down, you're like, I didn't want to see that right now.
But speaking of that not happening, John Teske.
Yeah, Teske has been stellar, and he really has shored up that backup center position far more emphatically than I think I expected, even though I was pretty high on Teske.
I was pretty high on not Mark Denal.
Yeah, I mean, I think we all were, but, I expected Teske to show potential.
But also still look a bit like a baby deer.
Yes, yeah. And instead he is... like expertly defending pick and rolls, he's passing really well out of the post.
Tapping stuff back.
Yeah, like his offensive rebound rate is at 15 right now, and that might be underselling the amount of opportunities he's given Michigan for second shots.
Yeah,
his block rate's now at 10. I mean, he's that is also underselling the number of shots he has impacted at the rim.
And what's his fouls per 40?
He's only committing 4. So. That keeps him on the floor.
Yeah.
I was not ready to really seriously consider the possibility of Michigan playing 2 big lineups extensively this year.
Yeah.
Just because I think that's going to be an awkward fit for Mo Wagner.
Sure.
Now I'm pretty ready to see it. Like,
and you mentioned that they played a 2-3 zone at some point.
They
right?
did. It wasn't with you know, they haven't played a too big lineup yet, but against VCU, when Teske comes in, they throw out a couple of 2-3 zone possessions, and I figured that has to be the defense that they'd go to most often if they're going to play Wagner and Teske at the same time, because you don't want Wagner trying to chase a traditional wing around the court. And then that has the added benefit of if you want Duncan Robinson on the court, you're not worried about him getting blown by because Teske's going to be there.
Yeah.
You have that with Wagner too. It seems to shore up a lot of the potential problems with this team. And then the question is, can Wagner get acclimated to running the actions on offense as a wing? Because it's very different than doing it as a center in B-line's offense.
Right, and then you also have the lack of floor spacing.
Potential spacing issues there. I mean, Teske does have some range, and we'll see.
True.
He has not attempted three-pointers in a game yet, but he's...
I mean, he's like a 15-footer pick-and-pop kind of guy, if he's
I think
that.
So. I mean, there's some practice. You know, I've watched him enough in practice to go, like, he might be able to stretch it out a little bit. B-line's mentioned it. In a press conference setting, I don't want to throw that out because if Teske starts canning threes, it's over. I'm buying like a number 15 jersey and wearing it every day.
You can't. You can't like wear it to the press box.
Probably not, but I would try most likely.
You just put it under something professional.
Yeah, yeah. I'll just put a button up over it and then just rip it open on press row. The
legends. So
yeah, so I'm excited about. I mean, because, like, Austin Davis has barely even had a chance this year, and it's not like they're saving a redshirt. He's already redshirted.
No, and when he gets in, he looks pretty plausible, but
yeah,
there's just like, no room for him on the court right now.
He gets in at the end of Chaminade and, like, immediately rips down three offensive rebounds. It's like, okay, I can see why he was a beast on scout team.
Oh, speaking of offensive rebounds, we need to talk about Charles Matthews.
Yes. He grabs six of them in a game.
I think he's the best offensive rebounder that Michigan's had under John Beilein. By some distance. Like, you always wanted that from GR3. You always wanted that from DJ Wilson. But when they would occasionally chip in. But Matthews seems like every time he goes after it, like, he's coming down with it and he's putting it back up.
Yeah, I think just a big part of it, and it extends to his defense. He plays with an absurdly high motor at all times. Like, he's in there in the second half against Chaminade when they're up by, like, 25-30, and he's hitting the deck for a loose ball. And part of me's like, hey, you know, maybe dial it back right now. But also, I mean, for a guy who was, like, a borderline five-star, went to Kentucky, transferred out because he wasn't getting time, like, you don't know what kind of effort level you're necessarily going to get out of that guy. And with Matthews, it's full bore all the time.
Well, I mean, especially with, like, remember the Harrison twins at Kentucky?
Yes.
Like, Cal will put up with some awful basketball.
Sure. Yeah.
I mean, you don't really know like what this guy's attitude is going to be like, but it's awesome.
Yeah.
As you mentioned, and you mentioned like maybe he could downshift a little bit against Chaminade. Against VCU, he's cramping up for a big portion of that second half, and if Michigan loses that game, you're going to go back and point to that.
Yeah, that's not going like to third game in 3 days.
Right. That's not going to happen again because it's the only time they're going to play 3-3. But it might be something to watch out for.
Yes.
Like when Michigan does have a lot of games in a short period of time. Although, I mean, it's not like he seemed particularly ineffective until he literally started cramping up against VCU.
Yeah, no, he was 4-for-7 on two-pointers and then just couldn't really move his legs anymore. And that's a problem.
And he's like leaving free throws wildly short.
Yeah.
Like there is that period where they're like 1-of-7 from the line or something.
Yeah, because Teske misses a few in there too, and it's like, ugh.
And Dockage is going on about how like you gotta get your and ones when it's like there's no possibility of actually getting that shot to the basket.
He was just like arm it up there, and it's like, well, that's kind of the problem right now.
Yeah.
Like, all arms is not how you're supposed to be doing that.
Yeah.
So
yeah, man, three games in 3 days from Dockage is a little bit. It's a little bit much.
It was.
He's calling you out.
Yeah, I got a shout-out out of it.
Ace something
from Twitter.
I didn't even hear that, and then people on Twitter were going,
I didn't either because I was kind of tuning him out at that point.
I just thought some jabroni got in his mentions.
Yeah. I said, because like someone posted Slack, like you just got called out. I was like, someone else surely has to mention that he brings up the plane crash thing every game.
Yeah.
And then they were like, no, like he said your name. I was like, oh boy.
And like you didn't tag him. or used the word
docket. No, I didn't even say his name. I didn't mention, like, Dan Dyke. Like, he couldn't have even name searched for that. I don't know how it came across his feed.
The dude is Beetlejuice.
Except
you don't even have to say his name and he shows up.
No, you just have to.
It's like super hardcore.
He is a subtweet sixth sense. That's, man, just dude, unreal.
Did I ever tell you that after the Kansas State game a few days back, that was the Doris Burke game that he did with Dokic.
Yes.
Which was awesome.
Delightful.
And we talked about it on the podcast, and I think I mentioned like it was creepy in a good way that they were kind of like flirting with each other.
Mm-hmm.
And I was on Dokic's radio show, and he's like, "Are you the guy who called me creepy?" And I was like, "No, I wasn't." Because
this is a compliment.
I legitimately thought that like I hadn't. But I went back to that podcast and I listened to it and I did. So he remembered my podcast mentioning him better than I did. So,
man, yeah. Don't slight Dan Dokic because he's got an elephant's memory for that stuff. Unbelievable.
I mean, he's a good announcer, but three days in a row is a little.
Yeah, I mean, that's a lot of Dokic, but especially by college basketball standards, I will take him over most.
Yeah. But he won't remember that part. He'll only remember the part where we're like, oh, good.
Yeah, no, that's certainly.
Because that's how he is. Anyway, do we have useful things to talk about still? Can we get back to Charles Matthews' offensive rebounding?
I'm down.
Yeah, I mean, like.
Well, that's another part of like the way that they're using him as, you know, a attacking downhill ball handler is. I mean, I think that's part of why DJ Wilson wasn't necessarily having the offensive rebounding impact that we'd hoped for, is that a lot of his offensive game was standing in the corner.
Okay.
With Matthews, a lot of these possessions – now, he's also working harder for it. There's no question about that. I mean, but a lot of these possessions are taking him to the basket.
I mean
– it's still the motor is by far the number one thing for me.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
But it also does fit in with the offense that, you know – he's the primary guy attacking downhill. Last year that was Derek Walton, who is a great defensive rebounder, but his drives on offense were not putting him in a position to grab rebounds.
Yeah.
Matthews also has that little pull-up game that he's showing where he'll just like jump 8 feet in the air on a 10-foot shot.
Yeah.
It
is weird having like a Kentucky-level athlete on a B-line team.
You get to see the difference like very, very closely. Like, like you see him slide step, and then you've got Duncan Robinson next to him trying to stick with the guy, and it's like, okay, I can get why athleticism is a pretty big part of basketball.
Yeah, and like he's just skying over people, and I'm like, oh yeah, that does happen, doesn't it?
That's pretty cool.
Like, it does happen, like when we have that, and not they have that. That's weird. So yeah, he's a fun player, and I dread Chad Ford's. Well, he got fired, didn't he? I dread Draft Express's latest mock draft.
Yeah, because he might be moving up there. So
because I swear to God, if he's a one and done at Michigan guy, come on, man.
I mean, Beeline's just too good at this player development
thing. I know.
It's like it's actually hurting the program. He's this good at developing talent. But especially since because that's the case with Wagner too, because he's going to get pretty much the same feedback from the NBA.
Yeah, yeah.
And the thought of Matthews and Wagner and the young guys on this team with the 2018 class that's coming in, I almost don't even want to mention it because that'd be like kind of a situation similar to what State's got this year, where it's like, man, like this is a lot of talent converging in a really fun way.
So the painful thing for me is like if John Teske was 1 year older, and we had this year's Teske last year.
That would have been very, very helpful.
That's a Final Four team.
That would have been very,
straight
very
up
helpful.
A Final Four team. Because the backup center is better.
Yeah, you know, that would have been that would have been really nice. Would have been in Phoenix last year instead of back home.
Yeah,
but
we're a cheery bunch, aren't we?
Yeah, but I think there's reason to get pretty darn excited about Teske the next couple of years too, and considering that, I mean, with that 18 class coming in, you want upper class bigs with talented younger ball handlers and wings, and that's what Michigan is going to have.
Yep. All right, we're going to take a break, come back, and we will talk to Greg Dooley about the game or other things that might be more pleasant, like
Anything.
Anything. Draft again, perhaps.
I grew up in a small town of Haslett, Michigan, and I witnessed a lot of great people making a lot of poor financial decisions. And I thought to myself, I don't want to be in that position. I don't want to have my retirement at risk. Over the last 17 years, my team has developed and refined our process, which helps people understand what's important to them and what they value most. And because people don't have pensions anymore, we're adding in multiple income streams during retirement. At Peak Wealth Management, our goal is to build long-lasting relationships, and we do that by building trust, by showing our integrity, and letting them know how much we care. And that's one of the most important things we do here at Peak, is understand your goals and help you get there.
The places you'll go may seem far from Ann Arbor. From San Francisco to St. Louis to Shanghai. But as members of the Alumni Association, we're never far. Because Michigan is more than a place. It's a mindset that connects us. For those who leave Michigan, but for whom Michigan never leaves, this is where you belong. The Alumni Association of the University of Michigan. Join today at umalumni.com.
If you need a place to stay in Ann Arbor and don't want to be stuck out by I-94, there's a new hotel downtown, and the owners, who should be well known to the Michigan community, have asked our help to get the word out. The Martin family, yes, that Martin family, recently opened the Residence Inn Ann Arbor downtown, just a block from Main Street and a short walk to Michigan Stadium. They're competitively priced and offer a free hot breakfast, free Wi-Fi, fully equipped kitchen and every suite, and an indoor pool. That's the Residence Inn Ann Arbor downtown.
In southeastern Michigan, the yearly cost for a nursing home averages $90,000. It doesn't have to, though. Reed McCarthy founded Ann Arbor Elder Law after handling a tricky situation for his own family. Years of experience later, his boutique firm works with clients across southeast Michigan dealing with Medicaid planning, long-term care, and tax, disability, and family law, not to mention family dynamics. If you have a family member who may need that level of care, or if you're ready to start your own estate plan, Reed can give you a plan for the future. Visit AnnArborElderLaw.com or call 734-945-9693. That's 734-945-9693.
Want the perfect game day outfit? Underground Printing has unique, great-fitting UM apparel and officially licensed apparel from legendary Michigan names like Woodson, Howard, Schembechler, Ufer, and more. UGP also specializes in custom printed apparel and promotional items for groups, events, and businesses. Whether you need one shirt as a gift or 1,000 shirts for a charity walk, Underground can customize almost anything for groups large or small. To learn more, visit Underground Printing at one of our three convenient locations around Ann Arbor or online at undergroundshirts.com.
Well, I give that 10 out of 10 for a Prairie Home Companion.
And a 0 on the rave scale.
Yeah, I would like to see like a Prairie Home Companion rave, though.
That would be fun. You'd get some weird dancing.
My wife is so repelled by Prairie Home Companion that if it came on the radio, which it often did, because it's apparently on like 24 hours a day during the weekend, she would like spaz out and be like, no, it's got to, no.
Did you see the Portlandia Prairie Home Companion tailgate, a little web series they did?
Oh, no, I missed that.
It sounds good. Doesn't make for good radio, but please go check it out. It's amazing.
That's Greg Dooley, by the way. Greg is the preeminent Michigan historian of the modern day. Is that true? It might be true.
They call me when they can't find bacon,
okay,
or there's
yeah.
no money involved. That's when they call me. So I like to say no bacon or no bread.
Right, yeah. So he's the preeminent open source Michigan historian, he's the roughest and toughest. He's west of the Pecos because like bacon's like soft, you know.
Super soft.
He's pampered at this point.
Yeah,
he's got that front row press box treatment now.
Fortunately, he's out selling books right now, so he's not listening to any of this.
No, no, we can do whatever we want to bacon.
You can
That's
call
right.
him Dave if you want.
I already did that in person. I don't need to do that.
There goes his motorcade right by to the next book signing. Lucky bastard.
I don't. That doesn't sound fun to me. Like going to a bunch of bookstores and like giving your stand-up back to a bunch of people and hoping that they buy your book?
You know, it's funny. People ask me about The Jug, especially, when are you going to write a book? And I really don't have any interest. I like to do articles. I like to speak. But at this point, I don't see a ton of – I don't have, like, a big thing where I want my name on someone's bookshelf. I don't see that as a big thing I care about. Maybe I'll change my mind, but
– It seems like an obscene amount of work.
Yeah.
Well, he's already done it.
I still don't care. I still don't. What's the point? I'd rather speak, and I'm starting to get into a little more speaking and public speaking and things like that. So I'm working on my magnum opus, by the way, the first 70 years of Michigan football, kind of traditions laced with rivalries, laced with very cool, funny, kind of M. Victor's-ish, like crazy wild stories from the period.
Kind of sounds like a book.
I'm going to do a book. That's what I'm going to do.
Are you working out with Craig?
I'm not. No. It's just a presentation. It's a speech.
Oh.
It's like an alumni event type of speech. So I'm doing it for free. If you know anyone out there, or Brian, if you're double booked, let them know. It's going to be pretty sweet, for real.
So if you're a member of the Alumni Association, call your local club and get Greg Dooley out there.
Yeah, I might do it for the Ann Arbor Club here sometime in the next couple months. I've already talked to Mike down there, so to kind of work it out like a comedian, work it out, take notes, you know.
Oh yeah, yeah,
yeah, yeah. So no, I'm excited.
Yeah, you go with Bacon to one of these things, and you hear Bacon, and you're the first time you hear it, like, this is amazing, this is great. The second time you hear it, like, this is the same thing.
Yeah.
He's got this down cold.
Yeah, the hard part is, and I've done it with the Jug thing, because it's kind of stretched out over games. I'm able to lace in some new stuff about it, which is kind of good, which is what I always strive to do. So.
Well, I mean, I kind of feel like we have these segments, and at this point, like, I know what you're going to say, and I know what Bacon's going to say, and I'm like, that's fine, because, like, As I was doing this, I realized that most people aren't paying attention very much.
Yeah.
So, like, it's totally new to them still.
Sure.
So, like, when we had you on for The Jug, I'm sure almost everybody who listened to it was like, oh, that's really new and interesting information.
People didn't know, but I actually just recycled film posts for the entire 2014 season. Nobody caught on. They were just copied and pasted from 2013.
I don't believe you.
Are you sure?
No.
That's what I thought.
Well, Feller, speaking of old stuff, I see that Tales from Old Blue is now out and you can pre-order. Is that correct?
It is.
Craig's better at advertising.
Well, and one of those stories is about this guy right here.
I was going to bring it up.
And we're in the Bose store. Whoa. Yeah.
That's already brought up.
Yeah, we have mentioned
we
that.
Have
well,
mentioned that.
Can I say, though, I came here last time before the Minnesota game to speak, and we took an Uber down, my wife, and I go, we're going to the Bose store. She's like, what? The Bose store. And so after she got over, not the speakers, not Bose, Bo, she's like, the coach, Bo Schembeck? Yeah, there's a store. Yeah, what's in it?
Exactly
everything,
what you think?
Yeah, everything you can think of with Bo's name on it. No, she's like, that's not a thing. I'm like, it absolutely is a thing. It's fantastic. No, she does not care about any of this. So.
No, I was a bit like, is she familiar with commerce?
Well, come on. This is kind of unique. This guy, my buddy here, is one of the biggest Michigan fans, and he's kind of amazed walking around here that it's all Bo-themed stuff. But it's all sweet and well done.
Yeah, he's doing a much better job of this than
yes.
Yeah. By the way, we thought we'd talk with you about the Snow Bowl, which is 67 years old today or tomorrow?
Tomorrow. This is one of those things. So I spoke in Bruce Mate's class with Jack Park, who's like the Bacon and Bruce Mate and me and every kind of rolled into one for Ohio State. He's the guy. He's on all the documentaries you see. And we spoke, and one of my points was that game, as far as this rivalry concerned, is really what kind of tilted the axis to make this a serious thing. Now, there were a series of events that fell into place, not only in that game, but afterward, that kind of made it that way. But I'd argue before that, Ohio was really our little nephew or whatever. They weren't really significant. And even a little after that, we were still dealing with Michigan State. Michigan State had six national championships in the 50s and 60s, all told. So we were still worrying about State and beating State. Of course, Bo came and that all changed. But I think it all changed with what happened in 1950, and I can explain why. If you'd like to hear that,
go
I'd
ahead,
love to.
Sir.
So, of course, So let's set the stage, right? We got Benny Oosterbaan's the coach. He takes over for Chrysler, right?
Right.
Chrysler's Mad Magicians win the national title in 47. Oosterbaan takes over, wins the national title in 48. They lose a couple games in 49, so things are starting to slow down. It's that problem of trying to replace a legend, right?
Yeah.
So 1950 comes along. Michigan actually starts out 2-3. They lose to Army at Yankee Stadium, and they lose to Michigan State, but Michigan State wasn't in the conference yet. We tied somebody. We lost to Illinois. 2-3-1. So this is a problem. We start to win some games. We make it to this final game. It's after Thanksgiving. We got off that for a while, but this was back when it was still after Thanksgiving. Thanksgiving Day is about 40 degrees, kind of like-ish today, rainy in Columbus. Friday, the temperature drops to the single digits. Okay, an Arctic blast comes down from the Carolinas, an unexpected moisture sweep comes in and dumps 2 feet of snow unexpectedly in the Midwest. People die. I mean, this is bad. Football games are canceled. Okay, so this game's in Columbus. The whole Michigan contingent goes down. The stadium is full of snow. 50,000 people are waiting to get in the stadium. There's a meeting. Okay, it's Chrysler, Oosterbaan, the coach, and then Ohio State's guys, including their coach, Wes Fessler. They meet. Chrysler knows that at this point, Michigan's in third place. If they win and Illinois loses to Northwestern on the same day, Michigan goes to the Rose Bowl. So they talked about canceling this game, and Chrysler, who was brutal, stern, and he was also head of the rules committee. He was highly influential and a legend. No way, we're going to play this game. And plus, there's 50,000 people that are waiting. They played the game. 45 punts. They're punting on first, second, and third down. Okay.
45 punts.
Actually, pretty profit. They punt for 1,500 yards in the game. The whole idea is, can you snap it, can you catch it, and can you punt it? Most of the time, the answer is yes. Okay. What happens? At the end of the first half, Vic Janowicz, who wins the Heisman Trophy that year, goes back for a punt. But Fessler calls a punt on third down with just seconds remaining in the first half. Okay. Bobbles it. Gets blocked. Michigan recovers it in what looks like the end zone. It's covered with snow. Touchdown. Michigan wins the game 9-3. After the game, the Buckeye fans, like we all tend to do, go crazy on Fessler for calling this punt.
Right.
Right? It's his fault.
Because you can just run the clock out.
14 days later, I'm doing air quotes. I know I'm doing those.
It's a very visual podcast.
He resigns. He resigns, okay? But yep. He doesn't quit football. He goes to coach at Minnesota after this, okay? He's basically forced out. Who does he replace with? Woody Hayes, all right? So that, to me, that crazy series of events. Now Illinois did lose. They lost to Northwestern. Michigan goes to the Rose Bowl, wins the Rose Bowl after starting 2-3-1 on the season. So you get Woody in Ohio State. Woody just takes a couple years to win a national championship, starts his thing. Then, of course, Bo comes, and the rest is history. A wild, crazy – oh, Michigan does not earn a single first down in the Snow Bowl. They do not complete a single forward pass in the Snow Bowl.
So is it still snowing during the Snow Bowl?
I've seen it was snowing and not snowing. They had a tarp on the field. They did have a tarp on the field before the game, but it froze to the surface, so it took them extra time to yank it off.
Oh, I hope they were playing on the tarp. That'd be awesome.
That would be sweet. They brought Boy Scouts and everything in, yeah, and people to help to clear the snow out of the stands and all that kind of good stuff. But pretty amazing. I think Pittsburgh played a game that day, but Sark tried to play a game but canceled it. But it was really Ohio and Pennsylvania that got hit the worst. And, yeah, I mean, it's crazy. And the onset with Woody Hayes coming in, he's the one who really flipped it. And then the beauty of it is that in the Big Ten, you had some awesome teams. You had Illinois, Dick Butkus. You had some great Northwestern teams with Ara Parseghian. Even, like, Indiana had some good teams during this stretch. But as soon as Bo and Woody are facing off at 69, they just crush everybody. And then it's all about the game. It's all about that 10-year stretch. And for us, as far as rivalry is concerned, I think there was a stretch when Notre Dame kind of just peaked up there because the games were so good,
yeah,
right? And then State, more recently, as far as wanting to beat, got to beat, sure. But to this point, though, I think since Bo arrived, it's always been about Ohio State, and I think most Michigan fans would agree.
No argument here.
Which is what makes this week so lame. Because, you know,
you guys got to sack up.
What do you mean sack up?
I'm sick of this, man. I heard Spath on TKA. Oh, we're going to lose. Listen.
Look.
Listen.
Look.
We got defense. Do you see those? That Horny Burke was like he had about 2 inches of space to make some of those passes. You think Barrett's going to do that? We're going to put that guy on his back.
That's true. I believe all of that.
I'm going to be dancing on the Eastern sideline in glee after this game.
Watch it. That's what I don't believe.
Yeah, I don't know.
You know how many speaking of punts, you know how many punts Ohio State opposition have returned this year?
No.
One.
Totally returned at all?
Yes.
So is he going high? Is he
No, he's averaging 44 yards a kick.
Holy moly.
So
he's Ray Guy.
That's amazing.
Now you know.
What's the Big Ten record? Because it's right around 40-45. I mean, 44-45,
I think. No, it's like 47.
Is it?
Yeah, this is some big.
Is it?
He's a 44.
I thought Mesko had a chance 1 year.
Really?
Okay.
He's like 43 and a half, so I'm rounding.
I'm obviously concerned, but because what we've seen.
So
but
you want me to sack up?
No, I'm fired up. I am fired up for this game.
Really?
Yes, I am fired up.
I have a deep and everlasting pit of ennui that has suffused me.
I understand that, man, but you're highly analytical. I read your previous Well, Brian, you look at the numbers, and you threw in there. You go, look, there is a weird thing that happens in rivalries, and it's true. We've seen it.
Michigan's – I mean
– I read your preview.
Ohio State is coming off a game against Illinois. They ran it up against Michigan State in the first quarter, so they haven't really had to bring much out the last couple of weeks. And Michigan, if they had anything in the quiver, you probably think it comes out against Wisconsin. Not really a whole lot there.
All right. Well, if this
but
all
Pitt
go
beat Miami today, so
yeah, that's true.
That's kind of where I'm at.
Pitt beat Miami with a freshman backup quarterback. The problem is that Miami has like two awesome games against Virginia Tech and Notre Dame, and then it's like, okay, we beat Georgia
Tech. They squeaked by a lot of mediocre teams.
Like
they're
not, you know, they're not up there.
But Ohio State got ham blasted by Iowa. So
I know, but that never happens.
Listen,
for us.
I'm banking on Barrett in our stadium with our defense and us making some things happen. Now, Scoop, you got the injury scoop on this one?
I've heard some things, but nothing definitive.
All right, man. Nothing to publish?
Do you have a scoop?
No, nothing.
Oh, you were calling me Scoop.
Yeah, you're Scoop, remember?
Get bent.
Remember everybody?
Get bent.
Remember everybody?
This is why nobody pays you.
Oh, boy.
Our assumption is we're going to see John O'Korn.
Yeah.
Yeah.
But that's not a report. It's just I watched what happened against Wisconsin.
You know, and I'm the last guy on let's get the other guy
my
in.
My Christmas list.
No. Well, I'm the last guy to say get the other guy's got to get in. But when he couldn't even take a snap for a while, it was really tough to watch. And I am obviously concerned about O'Korn. But we'll see,
right.
Man. We'll see, man. We'll see.
We will see.
Yeah.
We will see. We won't like what we see, but we'll see.
Well, if this all goes to heck
so I've
in
been
a handbasket.
I've been told to stack up and reminded of the worst moment in the draft history.
Was it really the worst moment?
Yes.
All right, man. I think you got to take chances,
I mean,
Brian.
I've never been like publicly and humiliatingly wrong on something.
Brian,
before.
if you're not sometimes going a little over the edge, then I mean it's why people like your site.
No, that's not at all. That's the exact wrong.
Is it?
Yeah, no, like we don't report much news anymore because it's really not worth it. The reputation hit that we suffered on that doesn't work. Like if we would have got it right, like who gives a crap?
All right, man. You know, like, I didn't mean to poke a sore spot. Well, I did, but not.
Yeah,
I did.
Obviously, you don't think it's as big of a deal as
I do. I don't. I'm sorry, buddy.
No,
you'll
fine.
Get them next time. Now, there's
oh
always,
God.
But no, there's always a career in politics.
Do you want me? To?
No. You've been tweeting about local Ann Arbor politics
a
lot,
yeah.
And I'm fascinated. So
I'm not suited to be a city councilman.
Well, can the Communist Party get someone on the ballot?
Communist Party? What are you talking about?
Are you like a libertarian? What are you?
I'm in a local context. I'm a pro development. Yimby.
Yeah, I saw everyone spouting off about the project on some site with a unused parking lot right now, and people are like, no.
Are you talking about the library? There's many of those.
Yeah.
Where there's like there's a weed-grown lot on Broadway that they want to turn into a dense housing thing, and people are freaking out. There's a library lot. You're probably talking about the library lot. Where
yeah.
People are like, save our city and don't let this parking lot become a large building, and I'm like, why are we talking about this?
Yeah, I'm with you, man.
I found the single season punt record. If you guys,
go for it.
I'd say
it
45.
It was 48.1 from Travis Dorsch of Purdue.
No
2001.
Kidding.
How many punts is that?
That was just his average that year, but minimum 125. So
Dorsch was a quarterback, wasn't he?
No.
Was he the punter?
No, that was definitely their punter. I think he was also there. I think he hit the game-winning kick against Michigan one year. So everything has to, you know, have some bad memory.
Well, that's amazing, though, 48.
This is like the opposite of a
Mesko is at about 44.5 in 2009.
Okay.
But usually, like, we have Bacon on here. And
oh, you know what?
Bacon, like, leaves bruised and upset. And now it's like.
Now it's us.
The shoe's on the other foot. Us? You didn't say. He's not talking about you.
He was laughing. He was winking at me the whole time. Do it.
Guilty.
Go.
Now, Brian, can I ask you a question? So Ace and I sit up there in the cozy confines of the press box. We're drinking Tim Hortons coffee.
Mm-hmm.
We're not cheering, but we're smiling and firing off snarky tweets.
Uh-huh.
Do you have friendly people that sit around you in the stands,
no.
or do you still have like people yelling down, call a timeout and it's first down, idiot, stop running and things like that? Or what do you have?
No, either.
What's your situation?
I sit right in front of all the IMG tickets.
Okay.
So, I sit right behind all the IMG tickets.
So, you're like in 22, 23?
I'm in section 44, row 16.
Other side. I got you.
And everybody in front of me is a jabroni who's never been to a game before, which is terrible because they're all like, I can't even see the banner run anymore because everybody's got their freaking phone in the air. As if, like, nobody's taped this before. It's all going to go
right.
on your Facebook.
Like, no footage.
Like you're showing off your freaking tickets that you got once. And then for big games, like, the people will stand on the benches for the first quarter of the Ohio State game. And we are, like, the break point between the IMG jabronis and, like, people who know what they're doing. So if we want to watch the game, we have to get up on the seats. And then everyone behind us is screaming at us.
They actually stand on the – why do they stand on the benches?
Because they're jabronis.
Okay.
So this happens every year where we are screaming at the people in front of us to get off the benches, and then they're like, well, we can't see. Oh.
Okay. Yeah, because as Michigan – for those not familiar, most of you are, but Michigan's elevated off the field. There's no reason to stand on the benches. You are already above.
Yeah,
but
once, like – three people start doing it, everybody starts
doing it. Right. Well, that sucks.
Even when it's like wet and rainy and terrible.
I'll tell you, every time I sit in stands now, I have a pretty horrible experience of people yelling comments, doing play-by-play, screaming down from row 85, where obviously all they're trying to do is speak to the people around you. Right. And I've turned into like a grumpy old, I don't know that I can do it anymore.
We had a conversation about this a couple of weeks ago. It was kind of similar.
It's rough. Yeah. I mean, yeah. And then you factor in, I have kids now, and you have people drinking a lot.
You have kids?
Of course.
Ugh. I would never have kids.
Fritz and Chalmers. Chalmers Elliott. No.
Are you serious?
No.
Because, like.
That would be great.
I'm just impressed you could run that one by your wife there.
No, you're the king of that, man. But my kids and I brought them to the hockey game, the first one of the hockey games in there, and you know, drinking, I get it, I do it, whatever, we're drinking right now, but dude, with the F-bombs and you know the third guy over is puking, and I just can't take it.
At a hockey game?
At the indoor, at the outdoor hockey game, at the I forget what we called it.
The Cold War.
Cold War, whatever.
And then, like, the thing that wasn't the Cold
War.
The Big Chill. Right. Yeah, yeah. But anyway, yeah. So Ace and I have a good time up there.
Yeah, we do.
Yeah. It's actually pretty fun in the press box.
I mean,
people think it's pretty stale.
They stick us in our, like, you know, the bloggers hooligans corner. And
it is.
Yeah.
Yeah.
People would think it's super lame. It's actually pretty fun. And we know a lot of the people. Bacon's in there. We mentioned him. The guys from TKA are in there. And then, you know, during the breaks, we chat. And it's kind of cool, actually.
Yeah, but Ace has to put up with Chris Ballas staring daggers at him now. So
That's on you, man.
What? Hey, it's not on me. It's on Chris Ballas.
Ballas is like muscle bound, I hear. I mean, he always wears like long shirts, and I don't know, but I heard he's not a guy to mess with. I was hoping, like, I know he and Sam were going at it.
What's he
going to
do? Lie about me on the internet?
Someone should do like the the early days of like the Wolverine versus.
I would love an oral history.
Would that be awesome?
Even like having interned at the Wolverine for a little while, you never quite get a clear picture of what exactly went down.
I've heard like in some there was like counter tactics and tactics and fake news was planted and all kinds of things. It'd be epic.
Wait, with MGO Blog?
No. Between Scout and
the
Rivals
when they split.
Yeah, there was definitely like a. Like a very long Sam Webb post where he like was just incensed and calling people a bitch and because it's like they went after his livelihood and he didn't respond very well to that.
Yeah, I get that.
Like they tried to report him to the NCAA.
Oh, okay.
Yeah. Not great.
Not great.
Sam is not a good guy to mess with.
No,
not at all.
No. But we are really, really off track. You've just been.
We talked politics.
Yeah, you're just dropping bombs.
We talked history.
You mentioned not wanting to talk about the actual thing we were supposed to talk about. So
that's a good point. But
we've stayed on track.
We do have to do that. So we will bid you adieu, Mr. Dooley.
Awesome.
I would say it has been a good time talking to you, but it really hasn't.
Brian Cook.
What?
We go so far back.
Calling me Scoops. Gonna. Take that one to my grave, and you're just like, let's bring that up.
Nobody cares, man.
I care.
All right. Well, you guys, despite all this, you guys are money. Seth's money. He's off the air now, but I love coming on here. So.
Well, yeah, you don't get to treat anyone else like this.
Are we going to – where are you guys going after this in your limos? You going to the hockey game? You going to Ruth's Chris? You going home? What are you guys doing?
Home.
Okay. All right.
I'm going to, like, sit and have a seance with people who remember what it's like when Michigan used to beat Ohio State.
Yeah. All right. We'll see. Well, look for me dancing with glee on the eastern sideline after this game.
If that happens, all is forgiven.
If I don't get sprayed going down the tunnel, coming back the other way.
All right. Well, this has been Greg Dooley, everybody. Don't buy his book because it doesn't exist.
Perfect.
The places you'll go may seem far from Ann Arbor. From San Francisco to St. Louis to Shanghai. But as members of the Alumni Association, we're never far. Because Michigan is more than a place. It's a mindset that connects us. For those who leave Michigan, but for whom Michigan never leaves, this is where you belong. The Alumni Association of the University of Michigan. Join today at umalumni.com.
Let me just tell you a couple things to keep in your mind while you're out there. When we take the field, we're going to win. We've got big goals. We've got big ideas. We've got to win this game, and there is no game on the remainder of our schedule more important than the one you're going down to the tunnel to play today. Now let's go. Let's go.
Underground Printing is proud to present the Bow Store. Visit us at our new location at 333 South Main or online at www.bow.team.
If you find yourself on the wrong side of the law in Ann Arbor or around Metro Detroit, you want a Michigan man in the huddle. Call former prosecutor and now criminal defense attorney Jonathan Paul at 248-924-9458 or visit his website, michiganlawgrad.com.
If you've got a cold room or you're feeling drafts in your house, you probably want to take care of that before winter. Here's what you've got to do. Call Ecotelligent Homes for a comprehensive home energy audit. They will find the source of your issue. Their licensed teams will install the fixes. They will help you qualify for the right local rebates, and they even offer 0% financing. Ecotelligent Homes is an award-winning DTE Energy and Consumers Energy trade ally. Call 248-291-7815. Or visit their website at ecotelligenthomes.com.
We have a lot in common. You rode the bus to Bursley, so did Larry Page, and so did I. And we all love MGO Blog. I'm Nick Hopwood, your MGO financial coach. My entire family went to Michigan State, but I was the smart one finding my way to Ann Arbor to study econ. I've been a financial planner for 17 years, earning the designation Certified Financial Planner, and founded Peak Wealth Management in Plymouth. know you're pretty smart and you probably have a sweet retirement spreadsheet already. My job is to make sure. As a financial coach, I make sure you're on track, or if you're not on track, I tell you exactly what you're going to need to do. And if you listen, I'll be able to tell you how your future should look, just like the knowledge. And I have cool charts and graphs to tell the story, sort of like the Mathlete. To learn more or schedule time to chat, check out peakwm.com/mgoblog.
Those were the words that he decided to speak. Change for me. Those were the words that he decided to speak. No shame.
That like it's like a one. We need more EDM on our podcast.
Yeah, we gotta start getting some things on the
boy,
upper
there's
end
something
of the scale.
I never thought I'd say. We've had nothing even close to ravey since like the ravey thing.
Yes, it's the one that started this all.
Right. And I'm like, wow, that's really rave music and
this is all reader music, so.
Well, the readers need to get more rave, clearly.
You need more readers who
honestly,
produce rave music.
Honestly,
start dropping that molly, readers. Let's go.
If this is music for readers, I'm impressed that it's not just like a small child banging on a xylophone. Because that's like, I don't think MGO blog readers would be like, ooh, that's probably a talented group of musicians. No offense, Ace.
Hey, man.
You have like three people who work for you who are
right
in bands.
Here.
I know, but were they good bands? Search your heart and tell me if you were in a good band.
Battle of the Bands, Scott Punk Champions, Neutral Zone 2005?
I'm going to take that as a no.
Oblivion was great once they got rid of me.
Skyrim sucks, though. Oh, God. I hope I didn't just lose our Hoglaw sponsorship. Talk to me if you like Skyrim, but don't actually. guess what we have to do?
I believe there's a hummus live.
We gotta talk some hummus. So I hold in front of me the sriracha carrot hummus, which is made with white beans and topped with sunflower seeds and apricots, or apricots, depending on how you roll. I think both are correct.
It's apricots.
Apricots is also correct. Seth.
I'm not getting the point.
Seth was just like, no.
Any feelings on the word, on the pronunciation? Well, Ace is our chief enunciator. Whatever he says goes.
Well, I've heard both, and not just from myself.
I've never heard someone say apricots.
Yeah, that's just...
Are you looking it up right now?
I'm trying to.
Well, I'll tell you something that's not in this hummus, and that's the ground-up bones of little innocent kittens. And Lantana is the only hummus that guarantees you will not have any disgusting kitten bits in your hummus. So check out all of their flavors at lantanafoods.com and find Lantana hummus at Bush's, Kroger, Meijer, or check your local grocer. What, do we got a verdict here?
Yeah, there are multiple pronunciations.
Yes! 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 I don't even need the game tomorrow. I am the winner.
Although it actually looks more like it's apricot instead of apricot.
Apricots?
It's got the AE.
Well, play it, you know. Come on, let's hear it. He's turned his volume down, which is a good thing on when you're...
Yeah, actually, you're just wrong. They're
what?
All...
Oh! Damn.
Shouldn't have clicked that one.
Oh!
Yeah, you lean more towards the British pronunciation, apparently.
Well, of course, I'm very classy. And I drive on the wrong side of the road.
Yeah. That's good.
Those are my British qualities. What are your British qualities?
I've actually been watching Midsummer Murders on Netflix pretty frequently lately because that show is incredible.
I've also watched, I think, 3 seasons of The Great British Baking Show.
Yeah, that practically qualifies you for citizenship, I believe.
It's better than you'd think. Also, it's something you can watch with your mom that isn't HGTV.
That's a plus.
When do you watch TV with your mom?
You know, whenever, like, she comes over to, like, babysit the kid and, like, you know, it's okay. My mom's there and she puts on HGTV and I'm like, oh, no, not more House Hunters International. Or the worst one, we're doing a really good job of not talking about the Ohio State game. Go.
Let's keep it rolling.
Let's keep going. Is Tiny House Hunters.
Oh, yeah, I mean, because I just I've never actually seen the show, but I've just seen, like, the tweets about
it.
People are like, yeah, like, I have, like, this budget and this lifestyle, and let's, like, cram it all into this, like, 4-foot by 5-foot space.
Well, so the House Hunters one is, like, I'm a dog groomer, and I make...
Blogger.
I make Jell-O pastries for a living. And
our budget is $8 million.
Right, yeah, yeah. But the tiny house people are, like, usually youngish, and they don't have a ton of money, so they're going to build this tiny house. It's just like, then you have a tiny house, which is really just a trailer.
Yeah, it seems like renting is preferable.
Yeah, but they want to, like, live in a
like
tiny...
Like homeowners.
I don't know. Or
but,
they,
you know...
They can just park it on, like, their mom's
miniaturized
property, and then they can... I don't know. It's like, I'm living at home, but I have, like, a cool place I can hang out and shower.
Your clubhouse. Of sorts.
Yeah, it's like a really cool treehouse.
Yeah.
So, but they run these marathons, these things, so it's just like 8 hours of tiny houses.
And I imagine the variation in that show is not
You'd be surprised.
Okay.
Which I think is kind of the goal of, you're like, oh, that's a very interesting and different tiny house. And then there's the one with the Waco people who almost got in trouble on Twitter because they hadn't done something. There's an Asian woman.
They weren't up to code on their tiny house?
No, no, like, they like, it's like, why isn't someone coming out against, like, the Baylor sexual assault stuff? And it's like, because they have a home improvement show? And Twitter was, like, trying to drag them, and then other people were like, well, let's not drag these people about that. So they have a show.
Okay.
They don't ever talk about Baylor.
It's probably good.
All right, fine.
If we must.
Wait! Don't forget our charity tailgate. Which is from 9 to 11:30 tomorrow at 1011 South Main, which is the first house north of the big house. It's to benefit the T-Wall Foundation. Wolverine Brewing is providing the beer. Food is provided by Scratch Barbecue. And our host is, of course, Homeshare Lending.
That's the most excited Brian's ever been to promote an event.
I like to
because it delayed talking about the thing we need to talk about
like,
for another
like,
30 seconds.
I like doing things. So the main thing I can't figure out about the Ohio State game is why the spread is only 12 points.
Because Pitt beat Miami today? Like, I don't have a better answer.
I mean, I kind of feel...
I mean, like, in the defense is the other part of the answer.
Right, yeah, but I kind of feel like the Vegas people aren't, like, fully grokking the O'Corn business.
Just how bad that... I mean, you know, because maybe they're also factoring in that there is a possibility that one of the other two quarterbacks may be able to play, even though we are not optimistic about that possibility. Yeah. But yeah, if I were a betting man, I know where I'd be putting my money on.
Right. So, I mean, John O'Corn has, when he drops back to pass, if you include sacks and adjust for interceptions, he's, 3.1 yards in attempts? Is that... Was that accurate? What does Football Study Hall tell us?
Pulling it up. It is 4.6.
4.6, so much, much better than I thought. I think I saw someone on Twitter. Like, there's a adjustment you make where you, like, subtract 40 yards for an interception. That was probably the 3.1.
Okay.
So, but 4.6 yards in attempt, according to Football Study Hall, and now they play a defense that is good.
Yep.
Which understates it. A little bit. I was shocked.
Mutant murder beast is the word that I think I used.
I was shocked to see that they were only like 30th in adjusted sack rate, and then I remembered the Indiana game from early in the year.
Just to throw it to Simi right now.
Right, where it's like, like the whole goal of the offense was to get the ball out of Lego's hands before it was humanly possible to close the distance to the quarterback. And if you've tuned into an Ohio State game this year, you have seen pretty much that exact approach by everybody.
Yeah, you've watched a lot of screens if you've watched Ohio State play this year.
A lot of, like, three-step drop stuff and not much in the way of holding the ball and trying to get it deep. And that's what Michigan's going to have to do.
Well, crap.
I mean, Iowa actually stood back there and threw the ball. But one, Bosa got knocked out of that game with a targeting call.
Yeah.
So they couldn't even use the Rushman for the whole second half. And the Rushman, by the way, for those listening,
they don't use their stupid names for stuff.
The four Bosas of the Apocalypse is what I call them.
Don't use your own stupid names for stuff.
the four defensive ends who are really good, they couldn't use that package, and they actually did stand in there, and Ohio State was kind of like, what's going on? Why are we getting blocked? And right. then they realized that they were just getting max protected, and they sent six guys, and then, yeah.
So Michigan's going to try to run the ball against the number two rush defense in the country. They're going to try to run max protect play action and get Donovan Peoples-Jones open against Denzel Ward and maybe pass the safety. And that I could see happening once or twice. I mean, max protect is hard to get through no matter who you are. And their safeties are kind of iffy. I mean, Damon Webb is one of them. He's not that good. Jordan Fuller is a true sophomore. He's another starter.
He's weirdly not that fast for, like, the Ohio State super athlete, whatever, a fan.
It's possible he doesn't think that fast so far.
No, he just got burned straight up by Noah Fant, the tight end for Iowa.
No, not Noah Fant.
Noah Fant. His last name's Fant.
Yeah, but Noah Fant's the quarterback.
I know. I got them confused.
He's just Iowa Fant.
Iowa Fant. Iowa tight end.
Rashad Fant's the cornerback, and Noah Fant's the tight end.
Yeah, Noah Fant.
Wait,
yeah.
Yeah.
Really?
Yeah.
Yes, I was correct.
Well, who cares?
Ah, oh, you threw me off. And I admitted it.
Oh, you're just getting your revenge for the apricot. You're just, like, needling me.
Well, I'm right, well, so.
Yes, that's true. You are correct.
So Apricot Fant, who is a Iowa tight end, beat him straight up in a foot race downfield. They brought him up. They were like, oh, you're a tight end. I don't have to worry about you deep. And right. straight up foot race beat him.
Well, so.
That'd be relevant if there was somebody to hit somebody with the ball deep.
I mean, O'Korn could get lucky. Look at this.
Hooray.
I didn't mean it to sound like that.
I mean, that was but that was like a legitimately optimistic way of putting it.
Right.
It's,
yeah, like
it's
you
just,
could,
that says a lot.
Like, if he throws it downfield, like, some of those balls will hit in the area of Donovan Peoples-Jones. Maybe.
No.
On the other side of the ball.
Yeah.
This is a rush offense that doesn't really bog down when JT Barrett gets too many carries. But if you can make that happen, you can tire Barrett out. Their two worst passing performances of the year were Iowa and Oklahoma. And then both of those, Barrett had like 15 carries, and the running backs were only getting approximately that many as well.
And so that's a multi-year issue for them.
Yeah, you go back to last year, and that's their complaint too.
So if Michigan can have JT Barrett run the ball, even if he's picking up, you know, 5 yards on some of those or 7 yards on some of those, like that, that's a step towards getting Ohio State off the field, off schedule, and off kilter. So, you know, they did a really good job of not allowing Michigan State to do that. But in doing so, I think they may have kind of shown their hand in that department a little bit.
Yeah.
And I think Michigan might be able to – oh, excuse me. Might be able to keep the ball in Barrett's hands, keep it away from J.K. Dobbins, and then kind of boa constrictor those guys off the field. If Michigan is in a game here, it's not too hard to see them like three and out for Michigan's offense. You know, Ohio State has a 5-play drive, has a 7-play drive, has an 8-play drive.
Yeah.
And those miles are going to add up, especially because Michigan doesn't have a whole lot of depth on the defensive line this year.
Yeah, I think my biggest fear for the defense of this game is them just getting worn down because the offense can't keep them off the field
right.
for very long. And
getting hoked.
And, you know, if you're seeing a ton of, like, Carlo Kemp and backups out, then Mike Dwumfor out there. That's gonna
Lawrence
be
Lawrence Marshall.
Yeah, like that could be real troublesome.
Like if they get on that 6-play drive, and then those guys come in, and all of a sudden it's been a 12-play drive, and then the starters are coming back in, it's gonna be first and goal.
Yeah.
So, I mean, I think in normal circumstances, Michigan might be able to hold this team down, and really give them a game. But since the offense projects to be so bad. Like once they get down like 10 points, like that kind of feels like game over.
Maybe this is what Vegas is thinking, is a tighter than expected first half and then a
Maybe.
Second half where Ohio State pulls away but doesn't have to make the margin 20.
Yeah.
I mean, I'm grasping at straws here to explain a 12-point line.
but I think they feel Michigan fans are going to bet it, and so.
What Michigan fans do you know?
Not the ones that we know. The ones that, you know, pop up in your Twitter mentions when you get retweeted into the next.
Those aren't optimistic,
no.
Let me tell you that. I don't know what's been happening in your mentions.
Yeah, those people, if they're betting anything in this game, it's like whether Jim Harbaugh is fired afterwards.
Mm-hmm.
Lifetime contract. Tell those people we have a lifetime contract.
Well,
now.
They'll be upset about that. Oh. I made a joke about like how I turned on one of my two NFL games for the year. Because I watched the Lions game at Christmas. Not Christmas, Thanksgiving. And there was a fourth and a foot from the 50, and Caldwell punted. And someone was like, oh, that's just like punting on fourth and six from the opponent 40. And I'm like, if you don't know what a number is, if you've never seen a football game in your life and you think that the numbers are just symbols that mean things like cat and dog and monkey, yes. If you are a literal child, yes. So that's what my mentions are like, and they are not very optimistic about the game.
Okay. I can't explain the Vegas line either then.
Right, so there we go. Nobody sitting here thinks that the Vegas line of Michigan plus 12 is sane.
Fairly encapsulates the way this is going to go.
Okay. Well, we're just bundles of sunshine, aren't we?
Yeah.
Well, at least we
at least we ended on super awkward.
At
silence.
Least we screwed around with Dooley so much that this podcast, which did go 90 minutes, you can't sue us, listeners,
right.
For shorting you podcast, is now over, and we all feel that tomorrow is going to be a colonoscopy of a game. Is that not? Is that ace? Say something. It's not a visual podcast.
No, I'm not saying anything.
A colonoscopy, I say. Colons. We would like to scream about colons. Also, thank our sponsors, Underground Printing, The Bow Store, The Residence Inn, Ann Arbor Downtown, Homeshare Lending, Peak Wealth Management, the Alumni Association of the University of Michigan, Ann Arbor Elder Law, Lantana Hummus, Human Element, Ecotelligent Homes, Michigan Law Grad, and the Colonoscopy Association of America!